This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 24th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 170. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, award-winning investigative reporter Salim Jiwa, taking a critical look at the BC NDP government's response to the coronavirus 1 year on. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you breathing a sigh of relief? The peaceful transition of power in the United States happened after all, 2 weeks after it looked shaky at best. Donald Trump flew away on Air Force One for the last time to Mar-a-Lago.
The future of this country has never been better. I wish the new administration great luck and great success. I think they'll have great success. They have the foundation to do something really spectacular. And again, we put it in a position like it's never been before, despite the worst plague to hit since, I guess you'd say, 1917, over 100 years ago. And despite that, the things that we've done have been just incredible, and I couldn't have done it without you. So just a goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form. And again, I want to thank our Vice President, Mike Pence, and Karen. I want to thank Congress, because we really worked well with Congress, at least certain elements of Congress. But we really did. We've gotten so much done that nobody thought would be possible. But I do want to thank Congress. And I want to thank all of the great people of Washington, D.C., all of the people that we worked with to put this miracle together. So have a good life. We will see you soon. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Then, on the steps of the Capitol, 2 weeks after an attempted far-right coup, Joe Biden became the 46th president.
Recent weeks and months have taught us a painful lesson. There is truth and there are lies. Lies told for power and for profit. And each of us has a duty and a responsibility as citizens, as Americans, and especially as leaders, leaders who have pledged to honor our Constitution and protect our nation, to defend the truth and defeat the lies. Look, I understand that many of my fellow Americans view the future with fear and trepidation. I understand they worry about their jobs. I understand, like my dad, they lay in bed staring at the ceiling, wondering, can I keep my health care? Can I pay my mortgage? Thinking about their families, about what comes next. I promise you, I get it. But the answer is not to turn inward, to retreat into competing factions, distrusting those who don't look like you, or worship the way you do, or don't get their news from the same sources you do. We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes.
State have had their first dose. In BC, it's around 120,000, a temporary military base. The sheer amount of National Guard soldiers reminded me of how China flooded the streets of Beijing during the 2008 Olympics. The violence that happened on Inauguration Day happened on the West Coast, But it wasn't the Proud Boys or QAnon cult followers. It was a band of Antifa radicals who rampaged through downtown Seattle and broke windows at the original Starbucks. In Portland, their comrades vandalized the Democratic Party office. The states remain divided, but good luck to Joe Biden to unify them once again. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
The federal government will not get one more vaccination delivered in British Columbia. I believe the federal government is the appropriate body to procure a vaccine for the entire country. That was agreed on by all premiers from across the country, coast to coast to coast, and that is what we're doing. We've run into a snaggle in Europe. That's a problem not for the federal government. That's a problem for Canadians. And we need to stand fast and ensure that we get the vaccines we deserve, that we paid for, and get them into people's arms as quickly as possible.
And in-depth vetting process. And I can assure everyone that there are no issues that arose in the course of that vetting process that would be any reason to expect Madame Payette to be anything other than the extraordinary Governor General she will be.
January 22nd, 2021. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau answers questions the day after Julie Payette quit as Governor General after a damning report on workplace bullying.
Did the vetting process for Ms. Payette involve reaching out to Canada Land Company, which employed Ms. Payette at the Montreal Sciences Centre, or the Canadian Olympic Committee?
For all high-level appointments, there is a rigorous vetting process that was followed in this case. Obviously, we will continue to look at that vetting process to ensure that it is the best possible process as we move forward.
The vetting process couldn't have been that rigorous because it was pretty easy for me to find out that she left two past workplaces amid controversy and questions around her treatment of staff there. So why didn't your government ask some pretty basic questions about her ability to lead? And why won't you commit to using a committee to select the next Governor General?
As I said, we are looking right now at processes that can be strengthened as we move forward, and we will have more to say on that as we make decisions.
But why not use a committee? Obviously, they did not work the first time.
We will continue to look at the best way to select people for the vice-regal appointments. It's an important role for Canadians, and we will look at how we can improve it.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Japan Times, show must go on. Officials and organizers deny reports Tokyo Olympics will be canceled. Times of London reported officials were working out how to make the announcement gracefully and without excluding the possibility of hosting the event in 2032 after the Paris Games in 2024 and the Los Angeles Games in 2028. IOC President Thomas Bach told Kyoto News there is no plan B and that the Games are scheduled to open July 23rd. Japanese Prime Minister Suga denied the report. Quote, I am determined to host the Games safely and securely in July, end quote, he told Parliament. Japan has yet to approve a coronavirus vaccine, but it has signed a deal with Pfizer to buy enough shots to vaccinate 72 million people. In Apple Daily, Chinese Christian villager fined $25,000 for celebrating Christmas. Niu Guobao, a resident of Lushan County, was accused of holding an early Christmas gathering with about 40 other Christians on December 19th, according to a Chinese human rights website. The Lushan County Religious Affairs Bureau stormed the venue and stopped the celebration. Christian books, calendars, and other material were confiscated, and the participants had their personal details registered. In the New Zealand Herald, America's Cup, UK's former richest man in Auckland as one of 466 other critical workers approved for the event. Billionaire Jim Ratcliffe is lounging on his superyacht in Auckland. It is unclear what now constitutes other critical worker in Immigration New Zealand's eyes, but it does extend to executives associated with the America's Cup team owners and sponsors. The 36th America's Cup yacht race runs from March 6th to 21st. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, protesters clash with police, feds during Inauguration Day march, abolish ICE protest. Fears of armed riots in Oregon's capital never materialized amid heightened law enforcement presence and the fortification of buildings, including the Capitol. Yet protests continued to unfold late Wednesday in Portland as demonstrators pushed for more rapid policy changes than what Biden has promised. A group vandalized the Democratic Party office in Portland. In the Seattle Times, protesters marched through downtown Seattle, arrests made for property damage. A group, which numbered around 100 protesters early in the evening and later dropped in size, marched through downtown and called for the abolition of immigration and customs enforcement. In chants, they decried both former President Donald Trump and Biden. About 40 of the protesters wound through downtown, Pike Place Market, and South Lake Union, along the way smashing windows at the Pike Place Starbucks. Police rushed into the market and made at least one arrest. Two others were also arrested. In the Bellingham Herald, the new Dick's Drive-In food truck found a spot to visit in Bellingham. The restaurant chain, which has 7 locations in Seattle, announced at the end of September that it was bringing its new food truck to Bellingham and several other communities as a result of online customer surveys. It made its first visit to Bellingham on January 23rd. Dick's is a Seattle tradition dating back to 1954. And these headlines in the Breaker.News. Major outbreak at Surrey Pretrial Service Center. Horgan ignored a flurry of thoughtful email opposing his pandemic election power grab. And Horgan's guest list for virtual swearing-in. Read the stories behind these headlines at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. We're calling it Operation Slowpoke across Canada. This week, there are no Pfizer coronavirus vaccines arriving while the pandemic rages in Ontario and Quebec. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in damage control. This is a curveball for his plan to call a snap election this spring.
And we continue to work every day, reaching out to the top levels of vaccine companies, including myself being involved, to ensure that we are getting the doses we need.
In Ontario, Premier Doug Ford suggested that Trudeau needs to become more aggressive with big pharma CEOs.
And that's a direct message to President Biden. Help out your neighbor. You want us all to get along, you know, hunky-dory, kumbaya? Help us out. I'm asking you for help.
Meanwhile, on the West Coast, Washington plows ahead. Governor Jay Inslee announced the Evergreen State's next stage of max vaccination. He also set a new goal.
We have established a statewide goal to make 45,000 vaccinations for COVID every day available to Washingtonians as soon as possible. This goal is higher than our current vaccine allocation by the federal government by several fold. So we are today vaccinating somewhere between 13 and 15,000 people a day.
More than 350,000 people in Washington state have had their first dose. In BC, it's around 120,000. On January 22nd, Premier John Horgan announced BC's plan to vaccinate 4.3 million people between April and September. Teachers and bus drivers were promised spots near the front of the line, but not anymore. They might get their shots before summer if enough supply is available.
This plan depends on a consistent supply of vaccine. That vaccine has been disrupted, and next week and the week after will be a challenge for us based on what we had anticipated to receive from the federal government and what they're able to provide us. But I want to say at the outset, blaming anyone for that is not helpful. Blaming the federal government will not get one more vaccination delivered in British Columbia. I believe the federal government is the appropriate body to procure a vaccine for the entire country. That was agreed on by all premiers from across the country, coast to coast to coast, and that is what we're doing. We've run into a snaggle in Europe. That's a problem not for the federal government, that's a problem for Canadians, and we need to stand fast and ensure that we get the vaccines we deserve, that we paid for, and get them into people's arms as quickly as possible.
My guest this week is investigative reporter Salim Jiwa. Salim Jiwa is best known for the 25 years he spent at the Vancouver Province newspaper, where he covered the Air India tragedy. Award-winning Jiwa wrote the books Death of Air India Flight 182 and Margin of Terror. He is watching the BC government response to the pandemic very closely. You can follow him on Twitter at Real Reporter for facts, stats, and perspective you won't get anywhere else. It has been a year since the virus arrived on our shores from Wuhan, China. A man somewhere in Richmond, Vancouver, and the North Shore who returned from the Chinese city reported symptoms on January 26, 2020 to his doctor. He was the first in the province to test positive on January 27, 2020. In BC, the death toll is now approaching 1,200 people. Around the world, almost 99 million people have been infected and over 2.1 million people killed by the disease.
The socioeconomic impact, the impact to our communities, to the world has been great. You've been looking for transparency and accountability about how the British Columbia government and its subsidiaries and health authorities have worked throughout this last year. Government communication has been lackluster in this whole equation.
It is not only lackluster, Bob, it's concealment. It's obfuscation of data. We've had significant problems getting facts out of this government. They like to turn off the lights so that we can't see. But we have managed to extract information out of them, just as you have. With your Freedom of Information request, you've unearthed some excellent stories. And me, through communications with Ministry of Health, I am constantly asking uncomfortable questions that the mainstream media seems to be missing because they're weakening. The mainstream media is considerably weaker than when I was part of it, and other good reporters were part of it. We had some great investigative reporters who in this province who brought down governments. But we don't have that. For example, today, during the vaccine PR thing that they did, we didn't hear a single question about revaccination. What happens with revaccination? In 6 months' time, we may not have immunity for people who are vaccinated in December or January. So how is that going to be managed? There was no word on that at all. And the testing program, for example, when they test people, we've had constant problems with the low testing that has happened in British Columbia in particular. Alberta has done more than twice what we have done. We were averaging per million tests, we were averaging the same as the Yukon, for heaven's sakes. And you know that Dr. Bonnie Henry basically became famous because initially reporters were concentrating on numbers only. And we were keeping our numbers down by not testing, right? And this is a problem. Right now on our BC dashboard, published by the CDC of BC, we're getting numbers for tests conducted. At the same time, they're reporting to the federal health agency, much lower numbers. And when you look at that, those numbers and look at BC's numbers, there's a vast difference, and the difference is caused by including asymptomatic mass testing that the film industry does or the National Hockey League does. And that skews up our ability to decipher what is actually going on in BC. It hinders our ability to know the positivity rate, for example, in various regions of our province. There is a lot of darkness around data. If you ask questions, So take long-term care homes, where before the second surge, they were giving us daily figures on number of staff illnesses, number of staff infections, number of patient infections, and deaths. And they suddenly stopped doing that when they noticed that they had over 60 care homes involved. Now, that's causing data blindness. And now they're giving us these numbers 1 week down the road. And as you know, in the news business, what is new is what is fresh.
Now, right? testing and tracing has been a big, big issue here in British Columbia. You've made reference to that, during the first wave, they were under testing. They were keeping the numbers down. They were not following the World Health Organization advice, which was very simple. Test every suspected case, because the more you test, the more you're going to find. The more you find, the more you're going to stop this virus.
Public Health Agency Chief Dr. Tam today emphasized the need for rapid testing in care homes, which has been, a point of friction in terms of what the federal government wants to do and supplies us with. Would they have supplied us with equipment? They've supplied us with money. The BC government has been reluctant. We get circular answers. We get long answers. We don't address the question that has been asked. Dr. Tam says she has flagged senior care homes as the place where rapid testing can be conducted, even if it is not 100%, as you said. The onus is on us to conduct those tests because even if we catch a few, we will be saving lives. Now, on the issue of testing, right from the start, we have tested in very, very low areas. We have tested in a very targeted manner. Doctors complained initially. And as you say, the WHO emphasized that part of any program to counter this virus has to be test, trace, isolate, and treat every case, which we have not done.
Here we are in mid-January of 2020, and they're giving us the four-phase rollout plan, which contemplates finishing up by the end of September. Is this feasible? And what do you say about the way they've communicated this plan, this vaccine rollout?
The fact that we opted initially to look for data that wasn't there. I wrote to Pfizer, and Pfizer said to me, we have no data beyond 21 days about efficacy. And we somehow conjured up the idea that it's okay to do, give the second shot 42 days after, 7 weeks after the first dose. Pfizer categorically denies that it has any data to support anything other than a second dose at 21 days. Dr. Fauci has resisted that option. Now, to go and do things beyond what a trial has already proven to be safe is itself conducting another trial. In fact, Dr. Bonnie Henry is conducting a clinical trial without informed consent, and that has been the complaint from nurses and doctors of BC that we've seen. As far as the vaccine rollout is concerned, so what she did was, she said, I'm going to give the first dose to everybody I can, not worrying about the fact that this was a pipeline that could dry up. And that's exactly what's happened to us. We don't have any more vaccine to give as a second shot. We've given some 5,000 the second shot, but we are far short of what we need to do. And then what is the question that she faces next? Is how is she going to cope if the pipeline does not fill up again and we don't get additional doses for some time? Are we going to start a second series, or are we just going to say, it's quite okay to give you a second shot maybe 9 weeks or 10 weeks later?
Washington State has a very ambitious goal of immunizing 45,000 people a day. Based on the new stats, BC will need to immunize 40,000 a day in order to reach herd immunity by the fall. And what we're seeing so far is less than 3,000 shots per day in British Columbia. The stats are showing that King County, where Seattle is, has immunized more people than British Columbia has immunized throughout the province. This is a plan that they've tried to roll out that I think is not going to be feasible with the people that are involved. They've brought Penny Ballam in to take over from Dr. Ross Brown. Other jurisdictions around North America have actually gone to the military, gone to the National Guard in some jurisdictions to bring them on board, and also gone to private companies. Washington State has got Microsoft and Starbucks and Amazon involved. They haven't gone to that effort yet here in British Columbia, where there's wide industry that they could rely on and partner with. They're still in the infancy. They've got a nice plan, a colorful document, but that seems to be all they have so far.
Yes, and the totally useless situation where they had this PR set up today where Horgan and Bellum and Dr. Henry turned up. Look, we've not done as well as other governments have done. Israel is a phenomenal example of success. They have now, they are now vaccinating 250,000 people per day. And they have turned into a real life laboratory for us. We know that efficacy is nowhere near where Dr. Bonnie Henry thought it was. We know from Israel that the first shot only gives you 33% or so efficacy. We don't know how long that immunity lasts from the first shot and how long we can actually delay the second shot. As far as rollout is concerned, we haven't done a good job in procuring the vaccines that we needed. How is it that Israel has such a huge supply in exchange for data that they will give to Pfizer? How is it that the United States has got such a good supply of the vaccine? How is it that the UK has a great supply of the vaccine? China, Russia, they're doing their own thing. India is doing their own thing. We haven't. We need a capacity in this country to make our own vaccine. We need a capacity to make our own masks, which we are short of. We were short of swabs. We were short of reagents. We were short of everything. We turned into beggars, for heaven's sakes. It was Alberta that gave us 250,000 N95 masks at the time when we were considering reusing the masks. And this whole thing is a problematic thing. It has not been handled properly in British Columbia. We've been very lucky in that our geography, our distribution of the population, our healthcare has been slightly better than many parts of Canada, and therefore we have suffered fewer casualties. But if you think about what we have suffered in December, we had 460 people die in December in BC, and most of these are seniors. We had over 200 people who have died in BC in January. There's a lot of casualties that we didn't need to have if we had taken care from the very beginning.
Where do you think British Columbia stands at this time when there is renewed concern about the UK variant, South African variant, and maybe other new variants that we haven't heard of yet that are spinning around the world, and we're told that they are much more contagious than the regular variants?
Well, that's true. We could have a third wave. And not only that, I think because of the number of care homes that are still infected, because of the number of active cases that are still out there within our care homes, I anticipate that we will have a death toll going on well into February and into March, possibly. So we should be seeing 10 to 15 fatalities per day. We will see a relatively smooth but not going down path on in terms of number of people who are infected daily. We will see greater infections in schools as the new variant shows up here. The two variants of concern are South African and also the UK variant B117, which Boris Johnson said today was much more lethal and extremely aggressive in terms of infection. So we need to do things at our school. We need to make our school safer. We need to make our care home safer, which means rapid testing of staff preemptively. In our schools, we need to better our ventilation systems. We need to separate our kids, give them the distance at which, you know, kids are facing a double standard right now. They're facing going into school. You are in a sort of a holy place where the virus doesn't attack. You come out and you're a member of the public and you have to distance 6 feet. And wear a mask. In classrooms, we're not asking these children to wear masks, and we're having a lot of trouble in our classes. So, yes, I think our fatalities continue, and our numbers will continue in the range of 400 to 500 per day unless we see the variant striking us.
That was my guest, investigative reporter Salim Jiwa. You can follow him on Twitter at Real Reporter.
Thank you, Bob.
virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the doctors, nurses, researchers, patients, and families who are all fighting to find a cure for Alzheimer's disease. It is Alzheimer's Awareness Month in British Columbia, where 70,000 people live with the disease, and not all of them are senior citizens. Go to alzheimer.ca to find out how you can help. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 24th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 24th in 1984, Apple launched the Macintosh computer?
The real genius of Macintosh is that you don't have to be a genius to use it. Macintosh, the computer for the rest of us.
Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.